So as Amy said, I'm not Joe Catania. I'm Dennis Fortenberry from Indiana University School of Medicine. This represents work that we've done in common, but I do want to say that the majority of the work does represent the work of Joe, Peggy Dolcini, and Gary Harper. And our commitment on this has been to take these new technologies for self-implemented testing, HIV testing, and examine ways to bring that to young people who are marginalized because of racial, ethnic minority status and poverty, and see if this new technology could be extended to them in ways that people have been somewhat skeptical about applying to them, and see what it would take in order to do that. So I think everybody's probably familiar with the availability of these. People call them home tests. We've decided to call it this because it reflects the idea that it covers the decision to test, the obtaining of the testing and carrying through the test, and then interpreting the test and following through in terms of confirmation and the initial steps in linkage to care. And it uses oral specimens, which may actually add to its attractiveness to some young people. These kits have been extensively evaluated, but they haven't fully examined all of the kinds of dissemination strategies. And so the kits have come on to a standard dissemination through commercial chains, primarily through pharmacies. And that in particular may represent one of the largest barriers to these young, marginalized young people using the test. So we were interested in whether there were alternatives that we could consider in doing that. And those have not been examined in some of the translation studies, nor has self-implementation been studied fully in the naturalistic settings, which young people might do it in their homes, on their porch, in their bathrooms, in their friend's house, on the street, all the places where those might be. And we haven't got to that yet, but that's where we're going with this. So our questions in going into this about the uptake and implementation of these tests, is it available to young people? Is it accessible to them? And can they get through the test itself with good fidelity, following the instructions? Well, this is different than other kinds of decentralized tests, point-of-care testing, because the quality control, you get one time for it. There's no learning curve. There's a learning point. You read the instructions, you do it, you get it right or you get it wrong. So we started a series of studies. These included direct face-to-face interviews with adolescents, as well as some focus group examinations with adolescents and with providers who were interested in this area, working with young people in high-risk areas. The set of interviews, 52 African American youth, half of whom were males. These are young people in low-income neighborhoods in Chicago and San Francisco. They had some experience with STIs, with scares, with prior testing. And we did these in sort of a semi-structured way so that we could get at least some independent observations from the young people as we went through the interviews. So this is a give you a sense of what the young people were able to characterize about the advantages of this kind of self-implemented testing, focusing on the issues of privacy and stigma. Some people don't want to go to a clinic because people, they see you walk in the clinic, they're saying, he's going to get tested. I would rather just do it on my own in my private little room. And this issue of stigma, I want to point out, no matter what technology we develop, none of those technologies are going to solve stigma for us, right? This is going to take a whole set of other approaches that use the technology, but we've got to approach stigma with something more than technology. And the issue is embarrassment and privacy. Again, privacy is something that you often hear from young people. It's always a little awkward when you when some older person you don't know is poking around your body and checking for things, this is my job. So if you can just go in and get it and bring it home, you can take it on your own time. Just do it by yourself. So people are talking about being able to create a private space around this so they can go through the process of questioning whether they have it, understanding that, and then work through it. Now, whether that psychology fully applies in a larger implementation, I think we'll have to find out. This is one of their concerns, and this is sometimes why it's important to talk to young people, because young people themselves recognize that linkage to care is probably one of the important issues related to this. If they find out they have it from the self-implemented testing, they might just say, okay, whatever, I have it. Then they let that be and not go to the doctor and get the care that they need. So they've already identified that this would be an issue. That means that as we engage the development of materials for young people, I think that suggests that the concept of linkage to care is one that would be relevant and important to them and probably should be fairly directly addressed with them. We did 5 focus groups with young people. Again, these were all 16 young people sexually experienced from low-income Chicago neighborhoods. These were a few more young women than men. And some of them had prior experience with HIV testing, some had not. The advantages that the young people saw, and I'm summarizing stuff that came out of the transcripts from the focus groups and the convener notes, they again focused on privacy, on confidentiality, and convenience in being able to do this without going to a clinic. And again, compared to clinic-based testing, a reduced sense of the stigma associated with the testing itself. They had some concerns, and they had some concerns particularly, though, about how they would get this in terms of going to a pharmacy or going to a commercial outlet to pick these up. But it came up to these same issues, right? If you're going to a cashier to pay for your HIV test, the issues of privacy and confidentiality are somewhat compromised. For instance, I'm not going to a cash register with an AIDS test. It'd be like with a cashier just looking at you, it'd be kind of embarrassing. That's the kind of thing that comes up over and over again in the focus groups that we've conducted. We also conducted focus groups with providers in the same neighborhoods. So these were in the neighborhoods where we were also recruiting young people to participate in our interviews and focus groups. Not all of them were direct healthcare providers. Some of them were case managers, social workers, but they all had direct contact with the youth in these neighborhoods. So we got a lot of the same thing. So again, there's a lot of consistency across the focus groups in the way the providers and the young people evaluate the possibility of these self-implemented HIV tests. The issue of increasing the possibility of confidentiality and privacy, the issues of decreasing stigmatization over clinic-based testing. We were asking as well about alternatives to pharmacy-based dissemination, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Of course, I think this is something that everybody's recognized in terms of these self-implemented testings. They're expensive relative to a 17-year-old who's unemployed, who's in an impoverished family, living in a high-density residence neighborhood, and in an apartment itself, often that has a lot of people living in it. $40 in a commercial pharmacy is probably not achievable for most. We began to ask if there were alternative dissemination, say through community-based organizations, buying in bulk at contract prices. We began to estimate that the price could go down as low as $11 or $12 in that kind of format, although that hasn't been extensively evaluated, as far as I know. And then a lot of these local providers reported there were a lot of local access issues. In many of these neighborhoods, the nearest pharmacy is 2 or 3 miles away. If you look at the distribution of pharmacies, you don't see any in those neighborhoods. So even finding something that would be an accessible point of purchase in many of these would be a challenge to young people, which is part of the reason we were beginning to explore, are there alternative distribution mechanisms that could be used by these young people to get their tests? So, and this is just emphasizing this issue that some of these neighborhoods don't have pharmacies. They don't even have very many retail outlets unless we wanted to sell HIV tests in liquor stores or churches. And I'm not sure that's a bad or an implausible idea, actually, but I think that's where this is not just a matter of putting a commercially available test in some place and say, go buy it. Some community mobilization, some structures also are going to have to be in place to help young people take these tests up, get it done, get the results, and get linked to care on their own. And those don't exist yet. So the providers did see a role, a possible role, for the community-based organizations as a place where we could actually distribute or some of these kits, where we could educate, add to the information the young people have about the kits, and really help the kids get oriented. Remember, they've only got one chance to get through this correctly. So if they had some additional a priori information, that might increase the likelihood that they could implement this test correctly. We had the providers evaluate the kits, and remember, they provide both written instructions and an online video, as well as a network of phone numbers so that they can call both for help and for linkage to care if they're positive. The providers saw that there were a number of issues in terms of implementing this with fidelity. Getting the sequence right takes some focus. It's not that hard, but it takes some focus. You have to read it correctly. And I don't know if you've ever been in some bathrooms where some of this testing goes, where you've got one light bulb and you're trying to test over here and there's no place to actually put things. There's no shelf, there's no convenient place, so you're trying to balance things. We've learned a lot of this doing self-testing studies with young people in their houses. How to follow up actions that are consistent with results, and then how to sort of connect those with confirmatory testing using many of the techniques that we've already heard about. So we know that this can be done well with adults, but the trials that have been done this far haven't included many of the people that we were focused on, which was part of our interest in seeing what would be necessary to take it to another step and add this to the menu of options available to young people. These are some of the concerns that the adolescents themselves that identified during our focus groups. These are this issue of distress, the negative emotional reactions, how to sort of work through that on your own. A lot of them suggested that they wouldn't do this alone. They would incorporate a friend or a family member sometimes in the self-testing, just one. We had the providers review the kits. We were interested in some of the details about how these written instructions could be interpreted, if the terminology was accessible to young people. In some instances, it's not. Whether the reading level is probably still too high, and probably needs to be to a third grade level or less. Points where even a provider thought that there was some places where they can make different decisions reading the instructions one way versus another. The density of the instructions is pretty substantial. Everything that's in the written instructions is not on the video. And I think this had more to do with the age of the providers than their estimation of the young people if the print was too small. The assessment of the instructional video, everybody agreed it's important, it's in a useful way, it's a way young people will access it, and that they could go through it and go back and forth as they needed to. But the video itself was not thought to be particularly culturally sensitive to the particular people that we're interested in. The background in the video is fairly middle class. It looks like somebody's very nice living room with a coffee table and lamps and curtains on everything. And so it wasn't sure that the language itself was going to be accessible to young people as they watch it. And we think that probably needs greater attention if this goes on. And then basically it was done in this fairly flat, emotional, it's no big deal. You'll get through this. And so there was little response to the idea that people's hands may be shaking while they're doing this. They may be anxious about what's going on. And so we felt like that wasn't, the providers felt like that wasn't sufficiently covered. There are other issues just in terms of the reading the test, using the test stick correctly, interpreting the lines, again, in varying light patterns. The lines don't always look the same or are interpreted differently. And then this issue of understanding what a positive is. A few kids understand a positive as good news. You have to make it very clear that a positive means virus is present, not that things are all right. So in conclusion, as we think about this new technology, or it's not new technology, but it's newly available as an option, are there ways to adapt it to a particular group that's at high risk? These are people that we would like to increase testing rates for, who aren't being tested, who have a high background rate of HIV relative to other groups. Issues of cost, privacy, stigma, and social and geographic access barriers, I think, are ones that we could anticipate. This issue of the benefits are things that I think we should clearly work toward, because this is a consumer product that people may be interested, even young people. I think we should probably be thinking, are there alternative dissemination outlets for this product that don't depend on commercial pharmacies or commercial outlets, so that we can put the kits in places where young people could access them, and hopefully put them in places where there was sufficient social support for using the kits in a correct way. That means putting them directly into community-based organizations. That means we have to begin to think about how to train the people that staff those and what these tests are, what they can be used for. Use them for education for them, so that if they're not providing them, they can at least help them learn how to use them so that they can go get them somewhere else, and then be a referral source for that. So that means there has to be an integrated set of information for people. Where are the access? Where are the outlets? Where would you get care if you needed it? So we think this is something that could be used, but think as things stand now, the kits themselves may pose barriers in terms of reading, the comprehension level, the evidence that young people can successfully implement these tests correctly. And then the issues that the materials themselves may not be appropriately designed for the audiences that we think are most important to have access to this particular option in a menu of testing options. That's all. Thank you very much. So I think now We have a few minutes for questions for any of us, and we have a mic, so if you'd come up, tell us who you are and where you're from, and ask your question.
Good morning, my name is Meg Sheehan. I'm from the Virgin Islands Department of Health. And I just had a question about the home-based HIV tests. I really like the idea, but one thought that I have is, what do you think the impact would be on data collection? Since now, right now, we collect information about HIV testing and positivity in the clinic, and that is a good capture point. But if it is all taking place at home, we become distanced from the data, and what might that do to programmatic responses and understanding where the epidemiology is going?
Well, I think one problem with decentralizing this at this level, right, is you're never going to know that except that ecological piece. You'll know how many kits are being distributed. But all of these are supposed to be confirmed, right? I think the instructions are pretty clear to do that. It's not clear how well young people will take that up. I think that idea that people will test and not move on that information is a real possibility.
Hunter Hansfield, Seattle. Bernie, great presentation. Remind me, what's the current status of formal promulgation of the new recommendations? It's still draft and still waiting for formal release and independent, or in addition to that, what do you envision and what's the status of rollout in labs across the country?
I'll take your second question first. About half the labs in the country are using the new algorithm. About at least 50% of the public health laboratories, a large proportion of the private laboratories, and it will be officially announced June 27th.
Other questions? Dan?
Hi, great presentations, Ali. Thank you. Dan Wolfeiler, California Department of Public Health. And I was just, when you started to talk about alcohol outlets, I thought, well, this is interesting, because on the one hand, if we could distribute kits through alcohol outlets, they're like mushrooms, they're everywhere. The downside is, I'm a little loath to give alcohol outlets the political capital, if you will, of saying, oh, we're collaborating with health departments, we're giving out HIV tests and STD tests. I'm just wondering, have you had those conversations? And then the second thing I'm wondering is, did the video, was it neutral in terms of are you having sex with men or women? Did it mention it? How to deal with that?
Yeah, the video doesn't take that up. Doesn't take up how you might have gotten HIV. And that's that. You know, the issue of using alcohol outlets for resources for young people who ordinarily wouldn't have access to that, I think that would be a big challenge. But you know what? There's, from my perspective, there are some practicalities in the world. I didn't create the world as it is, but I think we have to figure out a way to do it. And saying it's impossible to do that, when that's the best resource that we might have, I think should at least make us think, how justified is that? I think, you know, this idea of using other kinds of community resources, trying to get buy-in from religious organizations within communities so that you could use those resources, a lot of barriers there, and some of them are bigger than alcohol, but not impossible either. In many communities. So I think that would work.
I actually have a question for each of my co-presenters. Starting with Dennis, one of the concerns I really have is a mindset that an HIV test is like a vaccination. You know, and you're dealing with basically right now the highest incidence of HIV is among African Americans aged 13 to 24. And so you kept saying you only got one chance, but that's to only get tested one time. And the issue that we know for most folks who are getting infected is that they've had a negative test within, not most folks, but a lot of people have had a negative test within 12 months. And then pick on Rosanna as well. You showed the, you know, slide of the difference in interpretation, nurses and nurses practitioners, for syphilis tests and HIV tests, and said it's because an HIV test is more serious. And I think that we've had this mindset that a false positive is worse than a false negative. And I'm wondering how we do something about it, because we haven't moved on. So I'll give you each a shot at that.
I don't actually know of any data about repeat testing for HIV using the self-implemented test. And so I think, and that's another piece that I think is absent from the material that's available and the kind of training that we really would have to do with the community to make it clear that this is something that you need to do like you would use a pregnancy test. You get a signal for some reason, you do it again. You miss your period, you test, you're negative, okay, you keep missing your period, you get another test and you do it again until something else changes, I think. But we don't know that yet. That's where we have to, there's a knowledge base yet.
Yeah, Bernie, that's a great question, and we struggle with that because I think, especially in the Amazon, many of these health workers had never seen a test. So, you know, I think it could apply to any sort of remote rural health workers, and so, you know, not only are they trained very well, but, you know, behind the training is all this fear of what are the implications if I call somebody in my community, in my small community, HIV positive. And so this is where I thought, you know, maybe taking that subjectivity out of the equation by having, you know, even a phone or some kind of small reader could help. And then, you know, that, and then everybody could be more confident about the result. And also sometimes it's, you know, because the light is not very good on a dark day, but then, you know, why would they read syphilis better, right? So there's still a lot of psychological factors behind the reading that we have to overcome. Yeah. So I've now sort of converted to, you know, thinking about a reader. But I actually, while I have the mic, can I ask Dennis a question? You know, so we try to also promote uptake of testing for HIV and syphilis in MSM in Asia. We found in fact, we did it through CBOs, but we found in fact before they came, they've already accessed their tests from the internet, but they weren't sure of the quality of the tests they get from the internet. Is it possible in rural areas that could be? Did any of the teenagers that you interview mention, you know, trying to get it from the internet? Because that whole opens up another whole world of, you know, good and bad tests being available and there's no way to tell.
Yeah. We didn't address that specifically to my knowledge. So but it's an important place so they could access the tests from those kinds of sources too.
In a plain brand, yeah.
Sure. Charlotte
Gates, Johns Hopkins. I think that I agree with everything that's been said here this morning. We're at an opportune point in that we have problems, we have tools, and that in order to move ahead, I think that mobile technology, really, readers offer us a great advantage to be able to solve some of these problems. But I don't think we need to beat ourselves to death that we don't have all the answers now, but rather if we approach it as an iterative process and we keep doing more and more steps, baby steps, a little bit at a time, and that we keep improving the tests, we improve the training, we improve the readers, that we improve how we approach young people and MSM and other types of populations, rural areas in the Amazon, that we are making headway, and that knowing your limitations just makes you able to know where to put your next solutions. And so I think it's going to be an iterative process in the next 10 years.
You know, as Roseanne was talking, I remember some of her early talks in the around 2000 or so. And so I was basically, nah, that'll never happen. And I think people have had that, but and from my perspective, people have that same attitude about young people and how we can approach them with tools and engage them in the process. And so the technology has been wonderful. I think we can use some of the same successes to encourage us to apply them better and not figure that they're just the only answer. So, are we out of time?
Yes.
Thank you all. Amy, thank you. Thank you, guys.